Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for listening to the show this morning. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys. You can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And you can send me an email. I would love to hear from you. Just send me an email, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. This morning I'm speaking with a wonderful author who will suck you into fantasy land, slap you upside your head with war and grief and hopes and dreams, and then bring you down. It's just a roller coaster ride. Her book is called On Black Sister Street. Her name is Chika Unigwe. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Very well.
Okay. So I want to play a little song. I thought this was a beautiful singer, Naka. She's from Nigeria. So I want to play a little bit of this, and then we'll go into the show.
Okay. Thank you.
For the sake of our ignorance, yo, we get it pimp for belly. Then I'll be because I'm not one, you will see that spoon for mouth. So you'll be your way. Make us say you're my story, yo. Make us say you're my story, yo. Africa, Nigeria, from Warri to Abuja, Lagos State, Niger Delta.
So that was Naka. You want to pick up her album. Her name is spelled N-N-E-K-A, so check her out. She has a lot of wonderful music, some spiritual stuff, some political stuff, poetic. That one I just love. It's just an uplifting song, and it's called From Africa to You. And I thought it was apropos for today because we have a Nigerian writer on. I want to read from her book, On Black Sister Street. You can check out her website, chikaunigwe.com. That's chikaunigwe.com, chikaunigwe.com. This is a part from her book. I think it really captures some of the essence. Sissy was a dream maker in silver and gold. These were not clothes she ever would have picked out for herself, not even for this job. The blouse hugged her intimately, sequined in silver, a gold-colored nylon skirt that showed her butt cheeks when she bent. Sissy felt like asking for a longer skirt. She felt naked. Silver and gold nude. Long gold-plated earrings dangled from her ears and rested on her shoulders, thin strings of a setting sun, and on her lips the rich red of tomato puree, lips pouting sensually, she hoped, their redness gleaming. She tried to recapture the energy that had made her near immortal on the drive to the airport. She failed. She would come close to feeling like that only once more in her life. So this book is dealing with so much, as we just talked earlier, Chika, about immigration, about human trafficking. I've done a couple shows about human trafficking, and it's a horrible, dirty, grimy business.
It is.
And, you know, a lot of people think it only happening in Africa, it's only happening in Europe, but it's happening in America, and I tried to highlight that in the conversation, the interview I did, that it can happen here in America. As a matter of fact, somebody told me of a story here in Chinatown in Philadelphia where a cable guy found women behind a wall with beds behind a wall.
Oh, my goodness.
He was doing work, and he didn't confront the store people immediately, I was told, but he went to the police. And when they opened up, you know, the store, behind the wall were all these beds with women sleeping in.
Oh, my goodness. Uh-huh.
You know, like a little cramped space in the wall, you know. And the people don't realize it's right here in your backyard. But your story is dealing with Nigerian women, women from Sudan, women from different parts of Africa, looking for freedom from their circumstances, I guess, if that's what you want to say.
Yeah, looking for a better life.
A better life, you know. We all want a better life. We want more money. We want a beautiful husband. We want our children to be healthy, you know. We want a good education. There's so many things that we want. Do we want too much, Chika? Do you think in life we want too much?
No, I don't think we want too much. I think in a case like Nigeria, where the country itself is rich, but the difference between the rich and the poor is so, you know, it is so huge. I mean, you go to a city like Lagos, to see people who whose kids go to school where they go on school holidays to Paris and to Istanbul and to the UK. You know, they go on school trips to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have 13-year-old kids, 12-year-old kids fending for themselves, sleeping on the beach, you know. And if you're one of the people who don't have and you're constantly being confronted with so much wealth, then you also feel some sense of entitlement. You know, you live in the same country, so you're entitled to the sort of life that the other people are living as well. And I don't think we want, I think it's only fair to want, especially if you see people who have, you know, and they don't have because they're, I don't know, smarter than you or better looking than you or whatever. They have because, well, certain circumstances have made it so.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things you bring up in your book, because some of the characters who have, you know, they're just entitled, like the evil guy, Dele. Can I tell you? I wanted to scream at him. I wanted to come through the pages and strangle this guy. He's the main trafficker for the listener.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy who's trafficking the women. And, you know, it's funny because he's honest, actually. He tells them, this is what you're going to do.
I think,
you know?
Yeah, I think when I was doing research for the novel, that was one of the things that really shocked me, because I always sort of thought that many of the girls or many women who come into Europe from Nigeria, for example, to work as prostitutes have been lured in by some false stories. And so when I did my research in the Red Light District and I spoke to some of the women, I was very shocked to hear that they actually knew why they were coming. And I think one of the most touching stories I heard was the one of an auction house in Brussels where women, Nigerian women, are auctioned off, you know, and they're actually coming hoping to be bought. And so these are women who bribe, for example, if a band is coming to perform in Belgium, for a musical band, for example, they bribe the managers of the bands to get their names on the list as band members so that they can come into the country legally, right? And then they are brought to this auction house where they are paraded naked, you know, they have number tags around their necks.
Yeah.
And you know, and all their assets are being praised and they're all smiling and twirling. And actually hoping to be bought. You know, so I think it was one of the most touching and most shocking stories I heard, you know, that there are women really prepared to be sold and actually hoping to be bought, because if you're not bought, what are your options? You don't want to go back.
Mm-hmm. You feel like a failure. You feel like a failure.
You feel like a failure, basically, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and just the fact that they, you know, that they are aware, you know, and are willing to do this. And there was a story I heard from an ex-prostitute in Italy, and she told me about this young Nigerian girl whose mother had actually paid the pimp to bring her into Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So her mother had borrowed money to have her brought into Italy to work as a prostitute or to work as a dancer or whatever. She worked for a few days and couldn't handle it. But she needed her mother's permission to quit because her mother had borrowed the money that brought her into the country.
Right.
And so she called her mother to ask if she could leave. And the mother's like, oh, no, you can't, because you know, I borrowed all this money. You've got to make some money so I can pay back the person I've borrowed money from. And she's like, oh, but I can't do this. And the mother's like, oh, what can't you do? What, you can't dance? And she says, oh, well, we just don't dance in clubs. We do more. And the mother's like, oh, okay, so maybe you dance topless. What's the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
And so she takes a photograph of herself in her work clothes, you know, walking by the roadside. I mean, in Milan, you walk by the road, and the prostitution is not legal in Milan. And so she took a photograph of herself by the roadside in Milan,
mm-hmm.
the knickers, short top, you know, dressed like a prostitute.
Yeah.
And her mother, and then she sent the photograph to her mother. And then she calls her mother sometime after to say, well, did you see my photograph? And the mother said, oh, yes, I did, and your shoes are so lovely.
That's a denial. That's one of the things too you talk about in your book about the issue of denial. The families know, you know.
The families know, yes. But the thing is, if you don't live in denial, well, I think the thing is you want to be able to enjoy the profits of this without having to be culpable for it. You know, and I mean, there's a whole. I was talking to a professor from Benin City recently. And she was telling me that there's a whole, you know, group of middle-class women cropping up in Benin City. And these are all women who have daughters working and go to Europe. And so when you see your neighbor, you know, build a bigger house.
Yeah.
And her younger kids are going to a good school, and you have, you know, capital at home, you've got girls at home, and then, you know, you're very tempted to do the same thing because you don't see any other way out, you know.
Yeah. Let me see. I think I have a caller who had a question.
Okay.
Here. You're calling from 574 area code. Did you have a question?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to... Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment that I read the book, and I think it's a wonderful book that draws attention to something that is probably under-recognized and explores the roots of what, you know, constitutes basically almost a human slave trade type of thing. So it's a wonderful book, and I highly recommend it.
Thank you so much for calling. Where are you calling from?
Chicago, USA.
Okay. Thank you for listening to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a lovely Saturday.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's one of the issues people, again, just really don't aware, because you're going around your daily life and you just have so many things on your shoulders. You don't have time, so to speak, to think about this issue. But let me read a little bit from your book again. This is actually dealing with the character Dele. In his office, Dele's voice was not as loud as it had been in the salon. Perhaps Chisholm thought the rug and the air conditioner swallowed up the noise so that when he spoke, he did not sound loud. Or perhaps it was the sheer distance put between them by the massive wooden table he sat behind, his stomach tucked neatly away from sight. I take in girls everywhere, Italy, Spain, I think get you inside, Belgium, Antwerp. I get plenty connections there, plenty, plenty. He panted with the effort of talking. You know, this guy is like a monster, you know, and he's, and the funny thing, he sucks them in, he gets them to work. Even the one character who worked for him for a couple of months, and then he rings them in because he seems so nice. You know, he rings them in and he seems so nice. He's always helping, paying for things and giving her extra raises. I think that's Effie. The girl,
Yeah, that's Effie, yes. But, you know, I mean, it's a completely different world because when you talk, at least when I did my research, when I spoke to the women in Antwerp, they were actually grateful to the, you know, to the traffickers who brought them in, because these are people who were giving them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were giving them an opportunity to earn money, to be independent.
Mm.
And, you know, they were giving them the chance that their government would not give them. They were giving them a chance that nobody else would give them. And so it's a very, I don't know, it's a very upside-down world, you know. And
now, what would you say? What would you say, though, if, you know, somebody, you know, like your children, your child, like, for example, my daughter, she came to me and says, you know, like in America, we're very straightforward with things. And that's something you deal with, is the cultural little idiosyncrasies in the book and language and how people are supposed to do things, family responsibility and all that. In America, you know, we're very straight. And if my daughter came to me and said she's going to be a prostitute, I mean, I'm going to be appalled. I'm going to go off. I'm going to, you know, rant and rave. I'm just, it's going to be like the end of the world. I feel like I died or something, you know.
Yeah.
But with you, like one of the young women, this was Chisholm, and she's educated, she has her college, but she can't get a job, you know? And she thought this was going to be it. She gets her degree, and then she's going to get a job, and she can't get a job anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of goes and tells her parents this big lie, and they know. But they don't say, like you said, you know, and it's so sad because they're so desperate. She doesn't want to be like her mom. She doesn't want to just live in this room with the guy Peter, you know, even though Peter loves her, you know? And then she goes, and it's crazy. Let's talk about Ulek and Polycarp. Now, did you meet a young lady who was like that, who had gone through war in the Sudan and her village was burned? Did you see someone, or is that just from your knowledge of the area?
No, that was made up.
That was made up, yes.
Mm-hmm. But many of the women that I spoke to, the common denominator they had was that, or one of the things that they taught me basically is how much of a luxury that shame is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the most enduring questions I got, that's really stuck with me was one of the girls asked me, she said, well, listen, if your father were diabetic, for example, and had no money for his medication, and you could get it for him, would you do it, you know?
Yeah.
And then it sort of makes you think, you know, it makes you, I don't think that it's a very, at least for some of the girls, I don't think it's a very easy choice that they take.
Right.
They're taking that choice anyway, but I don't think they don't take it very flippantly, you know. It is something that is thought about, and it's something that they take because they don't have any other place to go to. And, well, I don't believe that it's very easy for a young woman to walk up to bribe
a client or
a band manager to get into Europe to be sold.
Yeah.
You know, I think you've got to have no options left, you know, to really get to that. You have to get a certain point to, you know, you've got to be really desperate to do that. And you know, one of the things I saw that was also very touching is the fact that they've taken a different persona on Sunday, you know.
Okay. When they go to church.
You have a huge array of you know, African Pentecostal churches in Antwerp, Nigerian churches in Antwerp, and these girls make up a huge, you know, amount of the population of the congregation of the church, and so on Sunday they go back to their real names, you know, and it's the one day in the week that they just sort of get to be, you know, whoever, get to be people other than just, you know, these women with monosyllabic names working
in the windows or in the room.
You know.
Let me read a little bit from your book. This is dealing with the John Jaweed. I remember I'd seen years ago a documentary here at the Constitution
mm-hmm.
Center about the Sudan and what was going on. And it makes me angry because now we're here in America in Libya, and I feel
mm-hmm.
like, you know, what the heck are you doing over there? I mean, I know my personal opinion is because of oil. But there's human – if it's about human rights and protecting humans – oh, my God, there are so many things going on, even on a, like, if you want to call, you know, massacre, you know, horrible genocide scale, the Sudan, you know. And they recently just, you know, tried to separate. They're trying to separate the north and the south. But let me read this part from your book here. The SPLA, the Sudan People's Liberation Party, which had been guarding the predominantly Dinka town, was withdrawing. There was a rumor that the Janjaweed militia was making its way to Daru to sniff out the SPLA members and to cleanse the city of its Dinka population. People were disappearing. They would have to travel light. I mean, this is, I don't want to go into the details. It's a very harsh part of her book here, but it's very raw, and it's basically dealing with the burning of this village, the raping and slaughter of the different some characters in the book. But this young lady who leaves there, I was going to talk about Polycarp. Polycarp tricked her. You know, I think he knew. You know, he's an evil guy, and he could not marry her, you know, because she's evil.
I think Polycarp is a coward, basically.
Yeah.
He's evil, but he's also a coward. And I think, well, I think both his cowardice and his evilness are linked together. He sort of lacks the courage to stand up to his mother.
But does he lack the courage, or because we, let's get into the cultural things, you know. Not marrying people out of their ethnic group.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very big issue, you know. I mean, that's an issue with the Asian people and
front
world, but African, different parts. No, if you're Ethiopian, don't go marry a Somalian. If you're Somalian, don't go marry, you know, an Egyptian, you know, so on and so forth. You know, so if you're Igbo, you don't marry Yoruba. If you're Yoruba, you don't marry Hausa, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, is he weak, or is he just living up to his culture, his you know?
I think it's both. I think... Or maybe his love isn't just strong enough to complement his strength, you know. So I think it's a bit of both. I think, I mean, I'm sure there are people who break those cultural, well, taboo is such a strong word, but I think who break those cultural boundaries anyway, and they constantly, you know, cross marry and intermarry and all of that. But I think he lacks both the courage and the love to do it. And,
Well, I think there was love in the story between the one character. Yes. And he begging her. You know, at first, I didn't know where you were going with it, because I will tell you, it's a beautiful book, because it's, again, it sucked me in to, you know, a kind of calm, okay, this is the story, and the women get sucked in, and they're prostitutes, and that. But it's almost like a film, actually. I could totally see your book becoming a film, because you do the present moments with the women, and then you go back to how they got there, you know, their lives before they came to Belgium and things like that. And then you go back to the present moment and the issue they're dealing with. I don't want to give away the story part, but there's a serious issue that the women are dealing with. And and then you take us back to the past. But the love between, he really wanted to love her, but also Peter. Peter was a good guy, you know,
yes,
and
he was good
really,
guy.
Really trying to love Chisholm. And I like that you have good guys and you have bad guys, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, that's
not, it's not about the dogging. Yeah, you know. But you know,
but
some
guys,
stories like this.
Guys.
Yeah, some stories like this. Though all the male characters are bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you try to, you have the humanness of it. That Dele is good, and he's helping people. He's paying, you know, bills for people. He's giving them new things. And then he has this other side, you know, and he talks about his daughters and, you know, they're going to be this and they're going to be that, and he takes good care of them. But then on the other side, he's, you know, he's a murderer and a thief and, you know, a rapist, if you'll say. We have these different sides. Do you feel in your life you struggle with the different sides of yourself when you have to make a choice? Do you think you struggle sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just talk about my experience writing this book. I come from a very, very, very conservative Catholic home. I mean, weren't allowed to use words like sex and love.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, being young and liking Salt and Pepper. You know, let's talk about sex, baby. And whenever I came on the radio, my mother would turn on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another song I really liked. Move close, remove your body, real close, until it feels like we are really making love.
Uh-oh.
You know, I couldn't sing it. Unless I replace the lyrics, replace the making love with something else. So I'll sing, you know, move close and move about the real close until it feels like we are really baking bread, you know? and so I came from that sort of background to Belgium where, you know, you sit on the train and you pass by Brussels North Station and you see all the girls in their display, you know, display cases, you know, waiting for clients. So... Excuse me. And that was a very big shock, you know, for me. And when I started writing about the women, when I started writing about prostitutes, about, you know, because I did lots of short stories on prostitutes from Nigeria, girls who were coming from Nigeria to work as prostitutes.
Yes.
Sort of prepare me for the big novel. And it was a very huge step for me, you know, coming from my, you know, background to actually, you know, walk to the red light district, miniskirt, high boots, you know,
mm-hmm.
to talk to the women. And when I started writing the novel, I had to rid myself of everything I thought of, you know, of prostitution, of sex, of, you know, so I started writing it from a point of view of somebody who had no
idea
and well, some idea, some knowledge, because I'd spoken to the girls, but who had no value judgment whatsoever either way.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
And that was very difficult to do. But
so how did you you know, we only have a couple minutes left, but how did you separate yourself from getting sad or maybe depressed while you were going through this or being
I did get. I had to stop sometimes. You know, I had to take a break sometimes just sort of like breathe and, you know, get some more strength and then go back.
Mm-hmm.
Some chapters were more difficult to write than other chapters. You know, there were some chapters I wrote, you know, over several days or several months because it was just difficult to do that at once. You know, I'd write and go back and then, you know, recharge and then go back. So that was difficult. But,
yeah.
And also had to pretend that my parents would never ever read the book. You know? Because if I thought they would, I was going to really censor myself, you know. So
Yeah, that's very difficult. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. We only have a couple minutes left. But you have a couple wonderful stories, short stories. I want to again mention your website, ChicaOnigwe.com. Again, ChicaOnigwe.com. We're just discussing her new book on Black Sister Street. What do you think your next book's going to be about?
It's about family, you know, again, family relationships and how much you sacrifice for the person that you love. So I have a new book coming out in June next year in the UK, and it's called Sin Eater. But I'm also working on another book now. It's a historical novel based on the life of Oluwadile Kuyano, the slave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the former African slave, yeah.
So what inspires you to write? Do you need music? Do you need a bath? Do you like candles? What's your process?
Oh, no, I don't do candles. I need lots of chocolate.
Uh-oh. Thank you. I'm a chocoholic too. My name is Vicky, and I'm a chocoholic. Oh my god. When I was in Poland, I was in Poland for 5 weeks, and one of the things that kind of soothed me, I mean, literally, is I would go to the store and I would get chocolates and ice cream. And they would just, the other actors were like, oh my God, you're always eating chocolate, always eating. I'm like, oh, I just, it reminded me of home. And, you know, it was great, but I'm a chocoholic too. Thank you. You know, thank you for admitting. But thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed your story. And I'll be giving away some of your books. So if you're listening, please become a fan on Facebook. Follow me on twitter.com/JoyKeys so you can get a chance to win on Black Sister Street. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I wish you much success with your new books. Please come back. We can talk about the next one.
We'll definitely love to do so. Thank you, Joy, and have a nice weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. I just got off the phone with Chika Onigwe, author, Nigerian author, her new book on Black Sister Street. Check out her website, chikaonigwe.com, and also become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JoyKeys, and you could possibly win a free copy, free, no cost, of the book on Black Sister Street. I'll be doing another show in a couple minutes with Gregory Kutrube. He's like a documentarian of artists, and we'll be playing some music, and you can look at some of the pictures of artists he's interviewed and listen to some songs. So please stay tuned. The call-in number is 646-929-0368. Later this month, I'll be talking with saxophonist, jazz musician Kenny Garrett. That's on June 18th, so please tune in. Also later in the month, Somi, jazz singer Somi, June 25th. And author Tayari Silver Sparrow has a new book, June 25th also. So please just look on the website, follow, become a fan. I appreciate your support. We're past 64,000 downloads of the show. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful Saturday.